Welcome to the When Bearing Witness podcast. This podcast is an invitation to explore trauma-informed storytelling, a safe and healthy process of gathering and telling painful stories. It's hosted by me, Maria Bryan, a career storyteller. I have long believed that storytellers play a crucial role in making the world a better place. For a brief moment, I was introduced to the concept of trauma-informed storytelling, and it changed my life. Join my conversations with trauma-informed experts and social good storytellers as we help shape the intersection of trauma-informed care and the storytelling process. Stories are sacred, and we can create safe spaces to tell and share them. It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're continuing our series on storyteller wellness. Today, we have Liz Jackson, the Director of Development at NAMI Greater Los Angeles County, the leading countywide organization composed of grassroots-based chapters that promote wellness, recovery, equality, and dignity for individuals and families affected by mental illness. Liz is a bridge-building fundraiser and a fierce advocate for racial and social justice. We're going to dive into prioritizing storyteller self-care when gathering and telling painful stories. I am so thrilled to have you on the show, Liz. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I wanted to start by just getting to know you a little bit more. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to development director at NAMI?
So I started this fundraising journey many, many years ago. I started off as a special events coordinator working with the American Liver Foundation's San Francisco office. So we had a small office on Market Street right above the cable cars. And I was responsible for building out and launching the first liver walk for them in the Sacramento area. It was a lot of fun. I was young. I was filled with energy. It was my second career after having spent some years working in the advertising corporate world. Mm. And so I just sort of took those skills and experience and applied it to fundraising and found that it was very transferable and that I had a different way of looking at things, perhaps that others who have been in fundraising and only done that may not have. So it was a lot of fun. I did launch that liver walk and we did lots of other things too. Many, many years later, many organizations later, I find myself at NAMI as a development director and I have been on this journey for about 2.5 years.
So in your role at NAMI, you are hearing lots of stories of individuals and families affected by mental illness. And I can only imagine the toll that that could take week in and week out. How do you practice self-care as the storytelling role within development?
It's interesting because when I first came to NAMI, you know, I had always known that it was important to practice self-care, but I don't think I was very deliberate about it. When I first started at NAMI, I said, okay, there's fundraising. I'm working with individuals and families that are impacted by a loved one with a mental health condition. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just transfer all my fundraising experience. And this is just another disease. That's sort of how I thought of it. And so I wasn't very deliberate about my self-care. And I found about, you know, a few months into it, I was feeling really fatigued. I was feeling easily frustrated, impatient. And so I started to realize that the day-to-day of working in this field, day in, day out, there is no break. I mean, it's 24/7. And then also, I think, you know, it was the year after 2020. The world that we live in, you can't escape it. Everywhere you turn, there is a friend who is struggling, a family member that's struggling. There's so much more conversations about it. So you really can't get away from it. And so it was hard. Since that time, I have learned to be more deliberate with my self-care. My self-care includes every day I move my body. If it's either a walk out in my neighborhood for 30 minutes, sometimes I'll do a 15-minute walk if that's all I can squeeze in, and I look hilarious, right? Like, I don't look like I should be walking, but I have sneakers on and, you know, I'm out there. If it's a walk, or if I'm able to in the evening, I do solid core Pilates. And then I also do a lot of self-care in the evening when I do the wind down, getting ready for bed. Like, I have my Headspace meditations. I have to listen to pink noise in order to relax.
I haven't heard of pink noise. Brown noise, I do.
Yeah. For some reason, it's the pink noise that gets me. And so, you know, the temperature needs to be right. I have to have the lights dimmed. My body, especially as I've aged, is so much more sensitive to all of this external stimuli. And so I need to do that, and I practice it. And some days I need more sleep than others, and I know that. Last night, I was like, I have to be in bed by 9 o'clock because tomorrow I have to be up early. I have all these different things. I'm very deliberate and very thoughtful every single day. And don't get me started about Sunday. Sundays, I will be staring at my calendar looking, okay, when am I going to be able to do this or that for myself? Maybe meet a friend for coffee if I'm able to squeeze it in, all of those sorts of things.
There's two really powerful things that you have shared. One is what it looks like when our nervous system is dysregulated. When we think of vicarious trauma, we might think, oh, you get maybe depressed, but the symptoms might not be what you would think. Feeling impatient and feeling really tired and lethargic are really common symptoms of just burnout in general, or maybe, you know, secondary trauma response. So I so appreciate you sharing that. And I encourage everyone listening to take a deep look at what some of the signs are that you are getting close to burnout, or that you might be experiencing vicarious trauma. It might really surprise you what you're experiencing is parallel to that. Also, what I love about what you shared is that you start the day and end the day with this kind of care, which I think is really wonderful, that you, you know, take that time to ground yourself starting out. So you start off with that energy, and then how you kind of release it at the end of the day.
That is so true. And it is very deliberate. And everyone always says, but how do you have so much energy every day? Or how do you stay so positive and optimistic? And I go back to that. You have to constantly be feeding yourself every single day in order to have energy for everyone else.
Right. You know, one reason why I was so excited to talk to you is because you have access to NAMI resources. So with that, you serve those who are affected by mental illness, but then you're also vulnerable to burnout and vicarious trauma as a storyteller and in fundraising. So for those who are maybe just starting to embark on telling painful and difficult stories in their role, what kind of NAMI resources or practices and tactics would you share with them to prepare them for this path they're about to embark on?
NAMI is a national grassroots organization. We have chapters all across the country. Every chapter has slightly different free, absolutely free programs, workshops, and services to the community. They can vary from a workshop that maybe helps you to identify when you might be approaching burnout, or to see it in other people and loved ones. You know, what some of those signs and symptoms might look like. I find, you know, I recently attended a workshop like that a month ago. I was just curious to learn more about that. And it was such a loving, non-judgmental community. It was so beautiful. I would encourage everyone to reach out to see their local NAMI chapter, introduce themselves, and just get to know, go out and see what's available. On the NAMIGLAC.org website, we have a calendar filled with different events, if you will, for every single day of the week. Every single day of the week, we either have something online or in person in all different communities throughout Greater Los Angeles County. I know a lot of NAMIs do that, and I would highly encourage that.
Yeah. So for those who might not be in tune, and I know I feel like it took me a decade into being a nonprofit marketer to kind of feel in tune with stress and burnout. What are the warning signs for yourself that you should start noticing? Like something's off. I think I need to address this.
I'm not able to. Yes, I'm not able to sleep well at night. I start to overthink things, perhaps. You know, that I shouldn't be overthinking. I am impatient with my loved ones around me. Mm-hmm. I tend to rush more and not be thoughtful. And I think especially as a philanthropy professional, we are working with so many different types of people every single day. And oftentimes we are the face of the organization, you know, the brand. We have to be very thoughtful and very deliberate about the things we say, our actions. And I think when I start to see that be impacted, that's when I know that I need to reset myself.
Right. I think whether they know it or not is what's happening when they are receiving stories week after week after week. It can be very overwhelming to learn about these really challenging, painful, difficult life experiences that are not their own. So when you are in that place, either going through an exercise like that, or you know that because a gala is coming up or whatever, there's appeals coming up, that you're going to have to gather some of these stories. It's probably more emotional upsetting than we give ourselves credit for. So if we know we're about to experience something that could be difficult for us as storytellers and fundraisers, what advice would you give to that person? You know that you're about to receive a painful story or go through this exercise of really, you know, sitting in that person's shoes. What can they do before, during, and after that in order to be protective of their nervous system?
Oh, I feel like that's a tough question. I think it depends on the individual and the individual needs, but I can share for myself. Mm-hmm. I would say that I take care of myself even more, that I am extra deliberate and extra thoughtful before. I would say that I try not to schedule too many heavy things in one day. So I try to maybe have some lighter things that I know will bring me happiness and peace and balance it out. I'm also a Libra, so I am all about balance, right? Constant balance. And so I think I'm very deliberate about how I schedule my days and the stories that I take in and the people that I meet with before and after. During, I would say that, again, I'm an empath, so sometimes these stories bring me to my knees, and I have to learn how to separate myself from that situation and get too involved, because I also have a tendency to just want to help everyone and want to do everything, right? And go the extra mile. And so I have to remind myself that that is not my reality, that I have learned to manage my own. When I first came to NAMI, I met one of my colleagues, Sally. I love Sally. And Sally lives with bipolar. And she said, "Liz, you have to be really clear about your boundaries with me, because I will step all over those boundaries." And that was a good lesson for me. So that's what it is, just setting those boundaries and being really deliberate about that. knowing when to refer them to the next place that will be able to help them. I can't help everyone and I can't help everything. And I have to remind myself that.
This episode is sponsored by Bloomerang, a solution that helps nonprofits like ShowerUp. ShowerUp provides mobile showers and personal care for those experiencing homelessness. Thanks to Bloomerang, ShowerUp increased their volunteer signups by 60% and first-time donors by making it easy to give right on their site. ShowerUp's executive director, Paul Schmidt, said, "Bloomerang is an ideal marriage of volunteer and donor management. The deeper we get into it, the more we love it." If you want to see how ShowerUp easily manages their volunteer and donors with Bloomerang, go to bloomerang.com/bearing-witness or visit the link in the show notes to learn more.
This is gold. This is gold. And I want to underline some things that you've said here. When we land in the nonprofit space, it's because we're helpers. Our background happens to be fundraising, marketing, communications, and holding space for people to tell their stories is very, very powerful, a powerful gift to the people that you serve and hold space with. However, you are not equipped, licensed, or trained to be their therapist. And you actually are doing justice by setting those boundaries, by saying, "I will hold space for you. And then I will pass you on to someone who is trauma responsive and is able to really help you in your healing process." That's powerful. That's really, really, really powerful to know, you know, where my skills are to just be here and tell your story and with your story move our mission.
It's been a wonderful skill that I have been able to build while at NAMI, for sure. Absolutely.
And how amazing that you had this one client say, "I will step all over you." And if only we had more folks like that, but really we, and you know what? I actually had a similar, you know, woman that I worked with who kind of said the same thing to me. She like really set her boundaries with me, maybe on the other side where she says, you know, "As I'm telling you my story, these are all the boundaries that I'm going to set." And I was so impressed with her. But then I realized that not everyone is going to be so gracious or so intuitive to like put those boundaries down. And so that's part of the role, is just knowing where storytelling can support, but then where that role stops. I love that.
I find that most people that are living with a mental health condition, the ones that are in recovery tend to be so open and so aware of their boundaries and what they should and shouldn't be doing. You know, they'll say, "You know what? I feel like I need to be really extra careful with myself over the next week because I'm feeling a little off." So, you know, I'm going to disappear or not be, I'll be a little quieter. I've heard those types of things. And I appreciate that. It's like there's this sensitivity in a world where we're not really that sensitive to others and what they're going through. It's a beautiful thing.
Right. Right. Do you think it's important that we tell stories of those impacted by mental health?
I think that I'm a storyteller. I love stories. But I also think that it's important to share stories because when you share those experiences, you are showing people that they are not alone, that hope is possible, that recovery is possible, and you're creating a community of compassion, support, love, and non-judgmental space. That is so rare to find. We're constantly feeling like others are going to judge us or think we're this or that. And when you open yourself up and share your story and you are vulnerable and you share what your experience was, your journey to recovery, you are opening that space and saying it's okay to talk about depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, substance abuse, intergenerational trauma. You're giving others maybe some hope to also share their stories. So the more we can talk about it, the more we're going to create a better society and community.
What are you most proud of as your role as a storyteller at NAMI?
Showing the different faces of people living with mental health conditions. They come in all different sizes, packages, faces. There's so much, so many different ways that people are struggling and recover. And I'm most proud of showing that all of that is all, that's all what mental health conditions look like. It can look like someone with OCD who constantly takes pictures of their stove because they think that they left the stove on. And even when they leave their house 2 hours later, they're still looking at the pictures on their phone, of which they took 40 pictures of, because they have to constantly remind themselves that they turned the stove off and they can't stop thinking about it. So it looks like that. And it also looks like someone who, you know, perhaps has a loved one who lives with schizophrenia and has been 5150'd and, you know, is struggling to be able to provide them with the best resources possible so that they can live a life that is meaningful in some way.
Right. Yeah. So many storytellers that I work with, you know, I tell them within boundary setting, if they become re-traumatized during this interview, have resources for them where they can access mental health services. And they might be able to share that internally, but they might not provide the, like a lot of organizations don't provide that services. So would you share a little bit more if they have a NAMI in their, you know, a chapter near them? What a great resource for storytellers to have on hand to say, let's stop this interview and I want you to have these resources after you leave here today. So can you just end this conversation and let us know what, like, how can they find more information about their NAMI chapter and what kind of resources will be accessible for them to pass on?
Yeah, that's great. So I would recommend that they visit NAMI.org. And on that website, they will be able to look up their chapter in their community. Again, we have chapters across the United States. And then they can click right to the chapter that is in their community and look at the different programs and services available. And I will share that. For the most part, we have a program called Ending the Silence. It's known as ETS. And it allows someone with lived experience to go out and share their story and educate middle school and high school students about the warning signs of suicidal ideation, how to advocate perhaps if you see a friend who might be struggling, what resources to tap into. Those are all presentations that are given by people with lived experience. And they go out and they speak about what their experience has been. We also have another presentation called In Our Own Voice, IOOV. And that's just a general presentation for the general public. We tend to do it with a lot of like companies. It's a way to promote awareness of different mental health conditions. Oftentimes it's, again, a speaker with lived experience who has been diagnosed with a certain mental health condition. They go in, they speak about how they realized that they had a mental health condition, what signs and symptoms, what prompted them, perhaps a crisis, what that crisis looked like, how they found NAMI, how they found resources, and how they recovered. So it shows the whole spectrum. And then we also have a Smarts for Advocacy training program that helps people take their lived experience and transform it to skillful advocacy. Again, you have an authentic voice. The thing about NAMI is that NAMI is, we elevate those with lived experience. We're a peer-to-peer model. And so we believe that those are the people who have the most to share because they've lived it, they know it, and they're able to share that with others.
Thank you so much. Can you share how Bloomerang has been a supportive tool for your organization?
Absolutely. Our end of year campaign in 2023, we had the most successful campaign to date. We raised above and beyond our goal. We raised $20,000 above goal. And I believe that the key to that success was the storytelling that we did throughout the campaign. We began our storytelling campaign in November, beginning of November, and we carried it all through November, Giving Tuesday. We followed it up in December with continued storytelling about, we highlighted our volunteers, we highlighted our donors, we highlighted our facilitators for our programs. We highlighted so many different individuals and told their story of why they were involved with NAMI and what their journey had looked like. And then we ended it December 31st, and we just had a phenomenal campaign. So happy. I'm already looking at this year's end of year campaign. We're going to get started even earlier because I believe if we do, we will be even more successful. And of course, we raised the bar even higher for this year. So I have big goals to meet.
Well, congratulations on your success of that campaign. I'm so happy to hear it and that Bloomerang was supportive of you reaching those goals. Liz, what a joy to talk to you. Thank you for what you do at NAMI and how you support the community in that way. And thank you for being on When Bearing Witness and sharing your journey with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Maria. I really appreciate this time to be able to share it with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of When Bearing Witness. This podcast was produced by our friends at Rustic Roots. They are video storytellers passionate about sharing the impact of nonprofits. From story ideation to beautiful and powerful videos on screen, they've got you covered. Get in touch over at rusticroots.co. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please do subscribe and leave a rating and review. And remember, your role as a storyteller is making the world a healthier, safer, cleaner, and happier place. Thank you for bearing witness. Until next time.